Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of Life Transformation Radio. We are so grateful that you are here, and we have another impactful guest doing amazing things in the world. Please help me welcome the Make-A-Wish creator and co-founder, Frank Shankiewicz. How you doing, Frank?
Real good, Sean, and thank you for the invitation to be on the show. I appreciate that.
Now, I am super, super pumped to not only have an incredible human being, but an Air Force veteran. Like, it's super cool to meet guys who are doing it, you know, and paving the way for us young guys to join.
Yeah, especially I really enjoyed my military years there with the Air Force.
Yeah, I have had a blast, and I know a lot of other people, you know, they join the Air Force, like, man, it's a great time. And so, yeah, if you're ready to get started, I am ready.
Well, let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. So Frank was raised in Northern Arizona. Following high school, Frank enlisted in the U.S. Air Force, was stationed in England, and received an honorable discharge in 1965. Upon returning home, Frank was employed by Motorola Incorporated for 7 years. In 1972, Frank started his career with the Arizona Department of Public Safety, assigned to the Arizona Highway Patrol as a car officer assigned to Yuma, Arizona, where Frank's interest in working with children began as a coach for the Special Olympics program. Frank was one of the primary officers from the Arizona Highway Patrol who was responsible for granting the wish of a 7-year-old boy with leukemia who wanted to be a Highway Patrol motorcycle officer, just like his heroes Ponch and John from the television show Chips. Chris was made the first and only honorary Arizona Highway Patrol officer in the history of the Arizona Highway Patrol, complete with a custom-made uniform, badge, and motor officer wings. Chris was the inspiration for Frank's idea to start a nonprofit foundation that would let children, quote, make a wish and have it come true. And thus was born the Make-A-Wish Foundation. You can learn more. Go to wishman1.com. You got a movie coming up, I heard.
Yeah, we do. It's in pre-production right now, and filming actually starts in Arizona on August 14th.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And so I'm so fascinated that just one simple act, one simple thing that you did turned into this huge, amazing, incredible, life-changing nonprofit. So I got to ask you, the first question I always ask here is, what is your why? You know, why do you do what you do? Why create the Make-A-Wish Foundation? Why do everything that you do?
Well, I was raised in a very poor environment. Just my mother divorced my father when I was 2 years old, abandoned me for a while. At 5 years old, kidnapped me off a playground and started a journey to Arizona where she wanted to go. And it was a very poor existence. We lived in cars. We lived in tents. Meal was always an issue. And we ended up in a little town called Seligman, Arizona on Route 66, where she was really then out of money, out of everything. And people took us in. And a little town of Seligman, 500 people, just helped us so much. They would bring us food. They would give us odd jobs. I eventually got a job as a dishwasher at age 10, working full-time. But a mentor who became my father figure during that period, a gentleman named Juan Delgadillo, just said, Frank, when you can, give back. So many people are helping you. And that wasn't a popular term. This is in the 1950s. And Juan, what do you mean give back? I don't have a thing. We're barely eating. Food is always an issue. He said, you don't have to have money to give back. You can help other people. You can pull the weeds in Mrs. Sanchez's yards. You can help Mr. Ortega convert that old caboose that was wrecked into what now going to be their family home. And you can give back that way. And I always remembered that lesson. And that was my why moment. So many people helped me that I just wanted to give back when I was able to.
That's awesome. I love that. So tell me who you were before you got to that point? Who was Frank transitioning from the Air Force into Motorola and then into the Highway Patrol? What kind of guy were you?
Well, after the Air Force years, I took advantage of some of the veteran benefits, especially the GI Bill to go to college. And Motorola, this is Vietnam era, and Motorola was looking for the Vietnam era veterans. Because of the fact of the discipline, the work ethic, and that, they had preferential treatment along with actually veteran to get hiring. And once you got hired by Motorola, and this is during the space age, this is now the mid-60s, and they encouraged, in fact, they helped supplement the GI Bill, sending the veterans to college to try and get engineering degrees. And I took advantage of every bit of that the military offered me from that. And again, Motorola, and ended up with statistical engineering. Mainly, we got rocket parts, we got missile parts. Are they going to fail? And when are they going to fail, or are they going to fail? A great job, well-paying job, a brilliant future with Motorola. But I was just that small-town guy, and I just got very bored with a suit and tie, the same thing every day, and looking for adventure. Mm-hmm. And friends of mine from high school days had joined the Arizona Highway Patrol, encouraged me to join. And just on a whim, I submitted an application, took the test, and out of the 1,000 applicants, I was one of the 50 chosen. And I said, I'm going to do it. Even though it was a big pay cut, this looked like it may be a great adventure. And my position in the Air Force was what they called Air Police, I think you call it now, Security Forces.
Yep.
And, in fact, ended up what we'd call base patrol over in England, where we're doing actual police work. We're doing the patrolling, we're doing the accident investigations, the criminal investigations, the writing of tickets, etc. So I had kind of that background that helped me out a little bit, too, plus the discipline and work ethic from the military.
Awesome. Yeah, there's something about transitioning from the military where what's instilled in basic training carries over into other, like it's so hard to get out of that habit because it's routine all the time. You know, they instill the core values, and when you can apply that to other areas of your life, you know, it's just a hard habit to get out of. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, well, it's not a bad habit either, because our counterparts that had never been in the military, that in fact went for work for Motorola, they were always on the back burner because it was more about them than about the job. And the military, you're never going to be late, right? You're always going to be 10 minutes early. You're always going to be the one who works a little bit late. And we applied that same ethic to the civilian world, where the people that never had that type of training just didn't get that. So it was all an advantage.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So can you pinpoint exactly when your transformation happened, or what sparked your journey going forward?
Well, when I joined the Highway Patrol, as you mentioned, first as a car officer down in the Yuma area and working with the Special Olympics, really enjoyed that because I was so into sports and just love working with those kids. And that's the first time I thought about my mentor, Juan Delgadillo. Hey, Juan, I think maybe I'm starting to give back. And then after a year assigned as a car officer, they started a new motorcycle program with the Highway Patrol. And, in fact, we trained with California Highway Patrol, and our equipment, our uniforms were identical, except obviously ours at Arizona. But that was that period right after that you mentioned Chips, the TV show about two California motorcycle officers, became so popular, especially with the young kids. They just loved that show. And I was assigned immediately to a 10-man squad that worked the whole state of Arizona, 2 weeks in one town, 2 weeks in another. And when we had some off time, we would go to the local grade schools and talk about bicycle safety to the kids, which they could care less about, but they loved getting all over the motorcycle. So it was a great PR thing. And in fact, we'd pull in, there was always a 2-man team, me and my partner, wherever part of the state we're in, and they'd yell, "Hey, Ponch, hey, John," the name of the characters from that television show. So like I said, it was a great PR thing, and I thought to myself, again, maybe I'm giving a little bit back through our department. And then in 1978, on an assignment by the California-Arizona border, involved with a high-speed chase with a drunk driver, 80 miles an hour in a 25 zone,
wow.
twist curves
oh,
and
geez.
So on. And just as he rolled his vehicle up ahead of me, another drunk driver pulled right in front of me from a stop sign. I hit him broadside at 80 miles an hour and was pronounced dead at the scene. Now we're talking.
Gosh.
I know you say, how can that happen? But
yeah,
my partner couldn't revive me. I got to hear the radio tapes later. 963A officer killed in the line of duty, and an off-duty emergency room nurse from California stopped and said, "Please allow me to try and revive him." And they said, "No, he's dead. There's nothing." And she ignored. Thank God she ignored my partner. And after 4 minutes of CPR, et cetera, brought me back to life. So that was my why moment. I ended up with severe injuries, a skull fracture, bruised brain, a traumatic brain injury, a lot of brokenness and that. And it took about 6 months to recover from that accident. But that was my why moment, because I kept saying, why was I spared? Every police officer I've ever worked with believes in a higher being, myself mm-hmm. included. You go to work every day, you say a little prayer. Please allow me to come home. You get home at night, you say another little prayer. Thank you for allowing me to come home. And mine mm-hmm. was, why did God spare me on this? I have no idea. There has to be a special reason, something that's going to happen in my life. And like you say, that why moment was a couple years later when I was introduced to this little boy who inspired me to start the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
That is incredible. 4 minutes, dead. A lady comes and says, I'm gonna try, and revives you.
Yeah, and
wow.
it's somewhat of a funny story right there. I mean, you always be a police officer, and I've got a 42-year career before I retired as a police officer, and you got to have a little bit of humor. And the humor, and I learned all this later talking to the psychologist, because I don't obviously recall too much about the accident. But and I experienced what they call a tunnel, going down the tunnel.
Okay.
As this tunnel starts closing, that's when you're dead, and as you see the light of the tunnel starting to mm-hmm. open again, that's when you're coming back to life. But he explained to me about the senses. When you're coming back to life, your senses start coming back. And the first sense I recall in explaining to the psychologist was a sense of smell. I smelled something very sweet, something very pleasant. And he explained later that was her perfume. And then I said, I experienced something else, sense of hearing. And I said, I recall sirens and people saying she brought them back. And what are they talking about? I had no sense in that at all. And then mm-hmm. the sense of touch, and something was tickling my face. And later on, I found out that it was her hair that was tickling my face. And then the sense of sight, my eyes opened up, and here's this beautiful blonde with a lip lock on me. If this is heaven, this is okay. This isn't bad at all. So like I say, we have to have a little bit of a sense of humor on that. Yeah.
Right. I'm so glad that,
and I'm so glad it wasn't my partner that, because he tried to revive me too. And he's a big, ugly guy with his bushy mustache with bugs in it and everything. That would have been very traumatic. So.
Man. Well, you got the best of it though.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow. Well, thank God. Did you ever reconnect with her afterwards and say, hey, thank you for saving me? Or?
Yes. Oh, yes. I had her name and her husband's name in that, because he was there trying to help all he could. I made sure that she got roses and candy and that. We stayed in touch for a few years and then just lost touch with her completely.
Oh,
but hopefully
my gosh.
When this movie comes out, because they're going to recreate that scene in the movie, which is titled Wishman, hopefully she'll see that and get in touch with me again. I would love to reconnect with her.
Oh, that would be super cool. Have her come to a premiere or... You know?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you connected with her after that. That's amazing, and kept in touch and whatnot. Wow, that's pretty cool. So what do you think
somebody
was
saves your life. You definitely thank them. Yeah,
yeah, definitely. Just try to find them. So what would you say was the best part about your journey? Like what memories stick out to you?
You mean total lifetime or...
Sure.
Well, I'm so fortunate, Sean. There are just so many. And if I can go back to starting the Make-A-Wish Foundation, do we have a few minutes on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and it was a very simple thing that because I had worked with these children all over the state, and when our director called and said, we have this little boy that we were introduced to, 7 years old, named Chris, terminal leukemia, only a few weeks to live, and he has a wish. He wished he could meet a motorcycle officer like his heroes, Ponch and John. And because I had worked with these children all over the state, I was selected to be that motor officer who's going to meet. And with the permission of his mother and his doctors, our department sent the state police helicopter to his hospital and flew him to our headquarters building in Phoenix, where they asked me to be standing by with a motorcycle. And I had no idea what to expect. I had never met this little boy. He's just coming off IVs. And in fact, I expected our paramedics to help him out of the helicopter. And instead, when the helicopter landed, here's this little pair of red sneakers that jumps out there, runs over to me. Hi, I'm Chris. This little boy is so pumped up. And just, you can see the excitement in his eyes. And he, can I get on your motorcycle? Right away, his first question. And he had watched that television show Chip so much. And as I said, our equipment was identical to California Highway Patrol, that he knew every switch and button on that motorcycle. This is a siren. Can I turn it on? These are the red lights. Can I turn it on? These are your flashers. What's in your saddlebag? It's the same as the character Punch. I mean, he's just having a ball. And I'm looking at his mother, and she's crying. And it puzzled me at first. Then it dawned on me that she has her 7-year-old back, a typical 7-year-old who's having so much fun. But he was fascinated by the wings on my uniform that motorcycle officers wear. And he says, I wish I could be a motorcycle officer. How do I do that? And we right away I started thinking on that. But that day he became the first and only honorary highway patrolman, like you said, in the history of the highway patrol, complete with his own badge that's still assigned to him today, a smoky hat, the certificate. And that evening when he went home, he got to go home that day instead of back to the hospital. His doctor said, I don't understand. His vitals are so good. Let's let him go to his comfort zone.
Yeah.
But when he went home, we started saying, this little boy's having so much fun, a highway patrolman needs a uniform. And they were custom made in those days. And we went to the uniform shop just as they were closing. We said, so we've got this little 7-year-old boy. He's about this high, this wide. Can you make a uniform? Which two ladies spent all night making his custom uniform for Chris.
Oh, wow.
The following day, we went out to his house, again with the permission of our commanders. And I led several motorcycles, car officers, red lights and siren into his neighborhood. You can imagine the neighbors, right? They're all popping out. What's
going on? Yeah.
Chris comes running out, hearing all the noise. We present him with our uniform. This little boy, again, is ecstatic. It only takes him a few minutes to change, and he comes out just beaming. He's a highway patrolman. But he comes over to me again, and he says, I wish I could be a motorcycle officer. And again, I heard that word wish. And I just explained to him the training we were doing and so on. And I said, it's a shame, just tease him a little bit. You don't have a motorcycle. We'd train you right now in your driveway. We'd set up traffic cones. Chris was a step ahead of me. He runs in the house and comes riding out on a little battery-operated motorcycle that his mother had got him in place of a wheelchair. And he's just as serious as can be. We set up the cones. He went through. Did I pass? Yes, you did, Chris. When do I get my wings was his next question. And those were custom-made also. It would take a couple days.
Sure.
And Chris again got to stay home that night, in fact, for the next couple days. But I ordered the wings. I picked them up. Just as I picked them up from the jeweler, I get a call from our dispatcher. Chris is in the hospital in a coma, probably not going to survive the day. And they said that you have permission to go to the hospital, which I did. When I entered the room, Chris was in the coma. His uniform is hanging right by his bed. Just as I pinned those motorcycle wings on his uniform, he came out of the coma. He looks at me, kind of groggy. Am I a motorcycle officer now? Yes, you are, Chris. He just started giggling. He asked for his uniform. He's rubbing the wings. He got to talk to his mom. He says, thank you. And a couple hours later, he passed away.
Oh,
and I always like to think maybe those wings helped carry him to heaven. But
yeah.
We learned, Sean, that Chris was going to be buried in a little town in Kewanee, Illinois. And my commanders asked if I would go back with another motorcycle officer and give Chris a full police funeral. They said we had lost a fellow officer, which we did. And during our journey back to Illinois, the media picked it up, the print media, the news media, the TV stations. And in fact, when we got to this little town, we were met by Illinois State Police, City Police, County Police, who all joined in to give this boy a full police funeral.
And wow.
Chris was buried. Yeah, Chris was buried in uniform. His grave marker reads, Chris Gracious, Arizona Trooper. And coming home back to Arizona, I just started thinking, flying home, here's a little boy who had a wish, and we made it happen. Why can't we do that for other children? So at about 36,000 feet over Iowa or Kansas or somewhere, that's when the idea was born. We're going to start a foundation to make a child make a wish, and we're going to make it happen.
Amazing. One little boy.
Exactly.
Turns into a worldwide movement.
Yeah, and we're so fortunate, Sean. Yeah, so fortunate because of since starting the foundation, and just what you said, one little boy, there is now this is 37 years ago, but there are now 63 chapters in the United States, 36 international chapters on five continents, and I just got this figure last week. There are now, the current figure is 415,000 wishes have been granted since 1980. And like you said, all because of that one little boy.
415,000 wishes have been granted.
And counting. That's only a week ago. So we've added a few.
Oh, my gosh. That is – I love the story. Like, I'm just imagining, like, all of this happening and just the emotional roller coaster that one would be on. Oh, my gosh. That is incredible. I applaud you. And your incredible team that has been able to make this a worldwide movement. So
yeah,
thank you for everything that you guys do.
Yeah, and like I mentioned to you earlier, it takes a whole lot of people to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we were so fortunate when we first started this, people would tell me, it's never going to work. We've never heard anything like this. It's just too much. And this Juan Delgadillo, my mentor back at my 10 years old and so on, always taught me, whenever you say and hear a negative, turn it to a positive. And it took a long time to turn that into a positive, but we finally found the right people to make it happen. And look what happened.
Oh, yeah. It amazing.
And just like your military, it was a team effort.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that. Yeah, absolutely. So this is Life Transformation Radio. And we are here with Frank Shankiewicz. If you have been listening, oh my gosh, what an incredible story. This is a live broadcast, and if you have any questions, you can call 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. I am blown away, and I am so moved by that story and how it got started. I got to ask you, on the flip side, what do you think was the worst part? Was it that the children are terminally ill, or is it just the parents' emotional state, you know, while they're making the wish and all that? So what do you think is the worst part about your journey or what you've experienced during this transformation?
Well, the worst part, and you said originally the terminal, because when we started this, it was four children with terminal illness. A child from 2.5 to 18 could make that had the terminal illness could make that wish, and they were acceptable for it. And like I say, through the grace of God and modern medicine, about 20 years ago, we changed that mission to children with life-threatening illnesses, because now about 70% of the children that had what was a terminal illness back in the early 80s are now surviving those illnesses.
Sure.
Which was such a turning point. In fact, I was involved with a group of doctors that could not understand this. We have what we call a rush wish. A doctor will come up to us and the family and say, if you're going to do this wish, you're going to have to do it within the next month or two because the child is not going to survive after that period. The child goes on the wish, whatever it might be, comes back from that wish or after receiving that wish, and goes into total remission. And the doctors can't explain it. I can explain it.
Wow.
The child has so much fun. The child has so much fun. The family has so much fun. The child is saying, let's a 7 or 8 year old, you know what? I got a lot to do. The heck with this. It's all psychosomatic.
Yeah. Yeah. It just reminds me of Robin Williams' movie where he said laughter cures things, you know, and positivity and all that. Patch Adams. That was the movie, Patch Adams.
It's so funny. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's so funny you mentioned Patch Adam, because if you recall the children in the children's ward, when he is doing his thing and making them laugh, those in fact were wish children that he recruited to be in the movie, because Robin Williams was a great big supporter of Make-A-Wish and it granted so many wishes. But you won't read about that because he always said, this is between me, the child, and the family, and I don't want publicity about it because it's about them. It's a private moment. But it was so funny because in that movie, in fact, those were all wish children in the ward. And then last year I got to meet, I was a speaking engagement in Los Angeles and got to meet the Patch Adams.
The real doctor. Awesome.
And the only way he would have a picture taken was first I had to be picking my nose because that was one of his trademarks. And then to put on the clown nose also like in the movie. So I've got those two pictures, which are just fun as can be.
That is awesome. Man, what a memory, right? I mean, what a memory.
Yeah.
So speaking of like people like Patch Adams and Robin Williams, and speaking of those people, who has been your biggest influencer throughout this process?
Oh, wow. That's a hard question to answer.
Well, we ask the hard questions on this show.
Yeah. I never thought about that. Again, it's just pain. The biggest influence, I'm going to go back to the gentleman, Juan Delgadillo. This man helped me so much in my youth that I always, when I'm doing something like this and I think of something good, and unfortunately Juan died about 10 years ago. But I just kind of look at him and say, hey, Juan, I hope I'm doing it right. I hope I'm living up to everything that you taught me.
I had that same relationship with my grandfather. My grandfather was, like, he believed in me so much. The highest rank in the Air Force is chief. And every time I answered, you know, I'd call him, hey, Grandpa. He's like, hey, a chief? Because he just believed that I was going to be a chief, you know. And he was just that type of person. He just believed in people. And, yeah, I can identify with that because, you walk around and you do things and amazing things happen. And you just look up and go, man, I hope I'm making you proud. And I hope I'm, you know, because you never forget.
Yeah, and I mentioned Juan, I'm still very close to his family, his son, and I'm so happy that he's going to be included in the movie. He was obviously in the book, but they're going to include him in the movie, and we're going to create a lot of the scenes with the actor playing Juan. And I'm so happy that the family is going to get to see this and see that relationship that Juan and I had.
Wow, I am super pumped. So who's going to play the young version of you?
Well, it's a gentleman's name is Anthony Steele, and you don't know his name. Nobody does, but if you mention that name in Australia, everybody knows it. He's a super popular actor in Australia, and this is going to be his first American film venture. And so he's playing me. Yeah, the movie's a period piece from 1950 to 1980, and the main character is going to be in my age group of my mid-30s.
Oh,
so he's a good, tall, good-looking guy. Naturally, he has to be. That's the only way he could get the part. So,
setting the bar high.
But
what's
fun, Sean, is for the past 6 months, we've been working on dialogue, and I say we, dialogue coach out of Hollywood.
Sure.
And, in fact, Andrew came over and spent several weeks with me kind of learning my personality. And then we got on the phone with the dialogue coach, and I read part of the script. And then Andrew reads it, and we're trying to get rid of his Aussie accent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so much fun. He's 2 or 3 times a week we're talking, and he forgets about that I'm old and I like to go to bed about midnight, and he's calling me at 1 in the morning. And But he's doing very well. In fact, it surprised me. He called, and my wife answered, and she thought it was me on the phone.
I love that you could have fun with that, right?
Yeah, like a ventriloquist or something.
That's amazing. Oh, that's awesome. I love it. So on the flip side of the influencers, who's been your biggest supporters?
Oh, there are so many people, just so many people throughout, I mean, throughout my total childhood and into my career.
Sure.
I'm just so fortunate to meet so many people. And I guess is my fellow officers, my fellow, I only did 12 years in uniform, 11 years on the motorcycle, and then was promoted to detective and worked narcotics and then retired out of our homicide section. But just the whole, again, the commanders, the supervisors, everybody just supporting you constantly. And I kind of miss that. And you, when you retire from the Air Force, you'll see that same thing. You don't have that closeness in the civilian life as you did during your military or police career.
Yeah, I got 4 more years, and I know people are talking about that. That's one of the things that they discuss, you know, is that feeling, you know what I mean? That closeness, you know, that you don't quite feel anymore. Yeah, absolutely. So I always ask this question because I'm fascinated by people's responses. Do you feel like your transformation is complete?
Yes, in a sense. I'm so fortunate because I said I mentioned I have 42 years with the police force. And when I retire, when I decide to retire, what am I going to do next? I looked in the classifieds if there's any positions for retired homicide detective and didn't see anything.
No kidding.
Yeah. But for years, I was the Wish Ambassador and like a spokesperson for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. They would send me literally all over the United States, even as far as Guam and Tinian and Saipan. On keynote presentations, for fundraising, meeting people, promoting the foundation. And I was in San Diego giving a speech, and a gentleman came up and he said, I really need you to get on my speaking circuit. How much do you charge for your presentations? And I said, I don't charge for Make-A-Wish. That's my foundation. He said, no, I mean separate. And I had no idea what he was talking about. Well, he was talking about a new career in the motivational, inspirational, and keynote speeches. And
sure.
He said, you don't have to do anything except get your name out there. People know what you started, but they don't know your name. And that was 7 years ago, and boom, through his mentorship, I mean, it has just skyrocketed, where I now, in fact, have my own personal assistant and booking manager, and she's turning down things.
So I
just feel so fortunate, Sean, to have these different careers, and then all of a sudden, as I get into my late years of my life, to have this whole brand new career, and who knows how long that's going to go, especially when the movie is out, comes out.
Sure.
We're just going to be flooded with speaking engagements.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely, because I know, you know, my kids are wrestling fans, and I know that, you know, like John Cena and a bunch of other wrestlers are huge into Make-A-Wish. They grant so many, you know, and that's just another avenue. And you got, you know, rock stars and movie stars and everybody. I mean, there's so many people that love the organization and really give to the organization. Yeah, I can definitely see you being your calendar is going to be full for a while. Definitely.
Well, and you mentioned John Cena, and he's the granted more wishes than anybody of a celebrity type in the history of the foundation. All you have to do is follow him up, and he doesn't even, he just says when and where, and that's it. I mean, this
that's
gentleman.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, and I met him a few years ago, and he said we did the photo op type thing where he's got me in the headlock, but then he allowed me to get him in the headlock for a photo op, and he's screaming, oh, let go, you know.
That's awesome.
Just a great man.
He's an average size guy, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Average size. Yeah, definitely. So.
But through the
movie,
through the mentorship, like you're mentioning, through the mentorship and that with the speaking career, I was so fortunate because Forbes last year identified me as the number one keynote speaker in the United States.
Wow.
And then other things have come on where I was awarded the Ellis Island Medal of Honor last year, and that's only be given to 6 U.S. presidents, so I got to join quite a group there. And then Ohio State University asked me to deliver the commencement speech last year to the graduating class. And that was a crowd of 19,000. So that was my biggest group to speak to.
Wow.
But the real honor on that was they gave me an honorary doctorate degree, the Doctor of Public Service. So sometimes I can use that little title, not officially, but Dr. Frank Shanklitz.
Right.
And my high school coaches who are still alive get a big kick out of that. They said, you barely got out of high school, and now you're a doctorate.
Oh, man. I love it. I love your mindset where you could just take something like that and twist it into something comical. You're not like, oh, man, what a great character trait to have, man. That is amazing. I need some of your energy. You know, I need some of your positivity. Yeah, definitely. So where are you headed now? You know, you got the movie going on. You got speaking. What kinds of other new adventures, business, family? You know, what kind of stuff you got going on in your life?
Well, it's predominantly all the movie right now. My book came out last November, and they're really pushing that now because of the movie. All of a sudden, people want to read the actual story. And the movie, I'm sure you've gone to movies or seen on TV based on a true story. You'll see that at the beginning. That means it's not a true story. So only some of the things. They embellish the heck out of it. But, we're just getting so much press on that, and that's keeping me going. In fact, they've already, Cannes Film Festival wants to do the premiere of the movie there, and that's going to just explode from there.
That's going to be huge.
But the speaking career, like I said, the speaking career has got me going. I just got back from Dallas last weekend. I go to L.A. for a big thing this coming weekend. And I have to talk to my booking manager where I'm going next.
Yeah,
she calls me every now and says.
You were speaking in San Diego, 2 weeks ago? I saw you at an event, right? Secret Knock was 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, and I don't mean to correct you, that was in Los Angeles. We tried Los Angeles for the first time. Yeah, that turned out pretty good. That was
pretty
down
cool.
in that what they call L.A. Live area,
okay.
which is kind of fun. They've really cleaned all that up, and a great turnout on that. A great turnout in Dallas. And one of the things, if I can mention, Sean, that I love about this speaking career is my meet and greets after are usually about an hour and a half to 2 hours. Not because I'm this greatest speaker in the world, but so many of the people in the audience are, in fact, related somehow to Make-A-Wish. And they come up to me afterwards and say, I'm a Wish mom, I'm a Wish father, aunt, uncle, grandma, brother, sister. And it's so neat to talk to them. But now I am meeting adults that, in fact, were Wish children that have survived. And that, to me, is the greatest thing, that because... that's the greatest reward. I never took a salary at all with Make-A-Wish. I wanted everything to go into the foundation.
Yeah.
But that's my greatest reward. These children, I still call them Wish Kids, and they will always be a Wish Kid. But I'll look into their eyes, and I'll say, what was your wish? And I'll just watch them relive that whole experience. And you could just see that sparkle, that glow again. And that is just the greatest thing, to meet these people and talk to them.
And created a moment for them that they will never, ever forget.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love it. So what do you think was the best resource that you found during your journey so far? What do you think the best resource was?
Best resource during a journey, humility.
Wow. Okay. How so?
Yeah. People want to say, oh, my God, look what you did. You did this, you did that. And I point out to them, no, I did do it alone. It took a lot of people, just like I said earlier. Mm-hmm. It was a team effort to get this going. And never get full of yourself. I'm getting all these honors in that. I could think, oh, my God, look at me. But no, look at the people that helped me. Be humble. Be humble. Be grateful.
Oh, yeah, that's huge. I hear a lot of successful people say, man, you got to stay grateful, man, and have a sense of gratitude and not let it boil over in the wrong direction, but always have that sense of gratitude always. I'm like, huh, okay. So if everybody's saying it, then that's the skill I got to develop, you know? So, something that I'm personally working on in my personal life is definitely always remain humble and grateful and you know, stuff. So, yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for sharing. So this is the point of the show where it's a shameless plug. So you can plug friends, quotes, websites, Facebook, if you like McDonald's. So you can give a shout out or whatever you want. You can plug whatever you'd like. So this is your time to shine. I know you've shined the whole episode, but this is your moment. Go.
Well, not much. Like I said, I do have the book out, Wishman, and that is available on Amazon. But if you would like a autographed, personalized copy, you can contact my administrative assistant. Her name is Stephanie, and her email address is Stephanie@Wishman1. That's the miracle number one, not O-N-E, .com. Stephanie@Wishman1.com, and she can give instructions on how to get the personalized autographed copy of the book. Or if not, like I said, it's just available on website on Amazon. And then if anybody wants to follow the adventures that's going on with me or the movie, I am on Facebook. Just friend me on Facebook, Frank Shankwitz, and you'll find me on Facebook. I don't try and hide anything on there. And then, like I say, the movie, that's the biggest thing, too. You can follow the adventures also on Facebook by getting under my name, and then it'll take you over to the Facebook page for the movie, which is Wishman is the name of the movie, just like the book. Mm-hmm. And then anybody looking for a speaker, again, they can contact my administrative assistant, Stephanie, at that email address I gave you, and would love to come and talk to your group, corporate group, private group, whatever it might be. Say, I'm traveling all over the place, so the only little hiatus we're taking is during the filming for from the middle of August to the end of September.
Perfect. Nailed it. Love it. So I got a question. So if is there a way that people can donate to make a wish? Like it, like if I wanted to donate like a monetary value.
Yeah, and you're breaking, Sean.
Oh, sorry. What I was asking was, is there a way that if someone wanted to donate, like if I wanted to donate money or if I wanted to donate something to Make a Wish Foundation, is there a way to do that?
Oh, sure, sure. Their website is wish.org, wish.org. Okay. And they when you go on there, they're going to say find a chapter, which means find a chapter in the United States close to you so you can give the money to the area that you live in. And it'll ask you to either put in your city, state, or zip code, and that will automatically take you right to the chapter that's closest to you. And then it will give you information on how you can do a monetary donation to that chapter or an in-kind donation or even volunteer for that chapter. Again, like I said, the give back, it doesn't always have to be money. Now, I want to point out, right, I don't just push the Make-A-Wish Foundation. There are 1.2 million nonprofits in the United States right now. And you may have others that you are interested in. What I would really suggest is you research those nonprofits to make sure that the money you're donating goes to the mission and not to somebody's fancy vacation, new car, whatever it might be. Because unfortunately, in a nonprofit world, there are some of those people out there. So the watchdog of these charities is charitynavigator.org. Charitynavigator.org. And you can look up your charity, and what Charity Navigator does is it rates the charities on a 1 to 4 star rating, and then it will show you where the money is going. Is it, in fact, going to the mission, or is it going to somebody else? So it's not only Make-A-Wish you can go on to get donate, but any charity that you're interested in. I'm very involved right now with one called U.S. Vets, V-E-T-S. It's not part of the Veterans Administration. And I've just been been a board member here in the local chapter up in northern Arizona. And their mission is to get our homeless veterans off the streets, into housing, into counseling, into job training, and into job placement. And they're one of the top-rated nonprofits in the United States. 89 cents of every dollar goes to the mission, which is almost unheard of in the nonprofit world.
Mm-hmm.
70 cents is the average. But you can see how much they're doing to help these veterans. And I'm so happy being a veteran to be able to go out and help these guys, get them off the street.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We talk about some of the statistics and, you know, the guys who are transitioning out and, you know, so the military has a TAPS program, a transition assistance program. And one of the stats that they talk about is that some of the veterans, after you retire, have a 5-year life expectancy. Because like you said earlier, you know, they don't have that camaraderie. They don't have that closeness. It's like life is just slowed almost to a screeching halt. You're not deploying. You know, you're not going on trips all the time. It's not fast-paced life trying to get a mission done. It's like you're just kind of sitting. Or you go into a corporate job and you're like, wow, this is really slow. You know,
yeah.
So they talk about 5-year life expectancy for a veteran who is retired after after full 20-year service. And that was one of the reasons why I want to start building a business and be an entrepreneur and really get my speaking going, because I don't want to be a statistic, and I'm so afraid that I'm going to waste my life away after the military. I want to do something amazing. So U.S. vets, I love it. I might have to research that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
And they have chapters all over the United States. And again, when I say a lot of times you don't have to donate money, we did a local thing here. I started a thing here. I'm talking to because they got an old motel and converted it. It looks like a military mm-hmm. installation. It's so pristine right now. And they've got the rooms in there where they can house about 120 of the homeless guys in our area. And it's very popular in our area because we're high in the mountains. So the summer times, they come out of the heat and want to get up here where it's cool and that. But I said, so what are some of the costs we don't think about? And I laughed at this one, and she said, toilet paper. I said, what? She said, well, just think how much we spent on toilet paper, soap, shampoo, things like that,
mm-hmm.
underwear, socks. So we started a drive in our little town. It's a small town, Prescott, Arizona, of only 39,000 people. But we have a Walmart. We have the Costco. We have the Sam's Club mm-hmm. in the area. So we started a drive in town. Hey, go buy a big old box of roll toilet paper, one of those 30 rolls, whatever it is.
Yeah,
they had to rent a little storeroom to start keeping this stuff. But that's a year's of supply of that they don't have to spend that money
yeah.
on those type
that's
of
awesome.
Things that can go actually to let's get these guys better training, food, etc., etc. So it's always those different areas you can donate to help out.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I like that there's a watchdog for all the nonprofits. I think that's really, really great. And something worth checking out, definitely. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. This has been incredible, emotional, because, I mean, when you were telling that story, I was like, oh, my, like, oh, with Christopher and the wings and amazing. And then you coming back to life, I mean, just amazing. And I'm just impressed and just getting so much value. If there's any way that I could ever give value back to you in any way, the answer is yes. And I'm going to be there and to support you in what you're doing and with the movie and the book or whatever you need. I'd definitely like to give back to you. And I thank you for your time and coming on the show.
I really appreciate it. I enjoyed talking to you, Sean.
Absolutely. I enjoyed it. Do you have a call to action as we wrap up? Do you have a call to action, something that someone should do today? Maybe that'll motivate or transcend and inspire their life.
Everyone can be a hero. Just give back. Give back to your community. Help somebody out.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. And good luck in the movie. Good luck with the book. And I enjoy watching the journey as it unfolds in the next coming months.
All right. Again, thank you, Sean.
Thank you, sir. Life Transformation Radio listeners, this has been another episode of Life Transformation Radio with impactful guests doing impactful things. Do as I always say, live your brand. Find opportunities every day to live out the values that you hold dear in your heart. And I call that living your brand. So stay tuned every Wednesday, 5:30 Eastern. That's when the show is airing, and every first and third Friday at 5:30 Eastern time. These are live shows. You can call into the guests. They'll be uploaded to iTunes. They'll be uploaded to Stitcher. Get involved. Like Frank said, give back to the community. Volunteer. Take care of where you live and where you work. And live your brand. And thank you for the everything about the show. Listen to in 19 countries. I thank you so much for your guys' support and all the listeners that constantly listen to the show. If anything resonates with you, like, share, comment, subscribe on iTunes, message me. If you have any guests that you'd love to see, thank you so much. And this has been Life Transformation Radio with Frank Shankiewicz. Join us next time and have a good night.